number 78. Welcome to These Fantastic Worlds, the science fiction and fantasy podcast from Jake Jackson. This week's tale is from ancient Sumeria, and it's about the ancient properties of lapis lazuli, a tomb, a thief, and an unbeliever whose only god is greed. It is the dead of night, some 100 years after the great floods that destroyed our worlds. Now the people of Earth tremble still at the mention of the wrath of the gods. But not I, a lost soul, some say, but cunning would be nearer the truth. I do not hold to these stories of gods who punish, or people as playthings of the ancients. All I see are angry winds, storm clouds, slides of mud that wash in from our great rivers, the Puratu and the Indigna, to destroy our crops. Tonight the skies are quiet except for the pinprick jewels that hang like lanterns in the endless dark above us. For the sake of the brightest gem, the deep, mystical blue of the lapis lazuli, desired by all and commanding of such a high price, Basir and I have played this deadly game of tomb robbery for many years. We know when to steal past the tired and the lazy who guard the resting places of the ancient rulers of our land. Quickly, they sleep. From the corner of the last dwelling, I see three guards slumped by the embers of their fire. Their faces lit by the glow, they rest peacefully enough. They are the only barrier between us and the death chamber of the supposed ancient king, Ur-Nammu. No need for death tonight, Erish. I look back at my companion and study the relief in his face, for he is often hesitant to do what must be done. Perhaps the needs of my family are greater. Perhaps he is a coward. No matter, for we can reach the tomb without disturbance. Now, I run towards the mound that rises between the guards where Basir and I have quietly dug a hole each night for the last 10 cycles of the moon. As long as we reach the hole, we are safe, and it is ready to be pushed through to the tomb that lies deep underground. With you, Erish. There's loyalty in that voice. He is a distant cousin, so feels himself bound to me. But as a woman in a society of violent disposition, I have had to earn his loyalty through wit and craft. We race across the dry ground, keeping our feet soft, making no noise in this quiet night. There is a slight wind in our ears, like a breath, gusting in and out from the hills around us. Here, we slip around the guards, over the mound, pull aside the reed mat we've used for disguise, and drop into our hole. Oh, I hate that part, Basir breathes heavily in my ears. You must grow into your manhood, cousin. This is not the most difficult, I whisper back. I know, but many would say that to begin is the hardest part of all. Indeed, I pull the reed mat over our heads, as we jostle for position within the hole, our limbs entangled. Even in the dark, I can feel the hot flush of embarrassment from Basir, unused as he is to the proximity of a woman during the day. Just think of the lapis, Basir. Oh, I do. With your portion of this great prize tonight, you'll be able to travel far from this place. Yes, yes, the time has come indeed, and all thanks to you, good Erish. Good, I thought. Hardly. Not a believer, I, nor a second thought about the death of another. Come. Let us push through this last block. We press hard. Our 4 feet are familiar with the patterns of the blocks of rock underneath, having navigated their silent parting over the last days. It gives. Yes, I feel it. Careful now. Push a little further, and I'll drop in to hold it before it falls. It comes. The gap is wider. So now I slip down, my breath held in hope that the corridor below is much like the others we've robbed. I land quietly and place my hands on the underside. Now you, I whisper sharply. Basir slithers in, bringing sand with him, and we both push at the block. From his sack, Basir pulls out a short staff and places it in the gap to ensure our departure. You have the tree gum? I ask as he shakes his sack. Of course. He strikes the flintstone, lights the gum-covered lantern, and our way ahead is illuminated suddenly, shadows fleeing ahead of us down a long, narrow corridor. I take the light from him and stride forward, as I have studied these tombs and know their codes. The older ones are more direct with fewer traps. They were built in simpler times, when the belief in the deity of the kings and queens was enough to fend away any instincts of greed amongst those who saw the treasures piled into the tombs, the gems, the walls of lapis lazuli. "The air is so dry in this one," Basir shuffles behind me. Many of the others had already been visited by people like us. Perhaps the ghosts of this king have kept everyone away.
"Don't say that. You know I hate ghosts."
Basir was now a few paces behind, unable to keep up with my enthusiasm for the final prize, fearful of what the flickering light reveals, the dancing shadows, the paintings of ancient battles across the walls, dark stains of writing on the ceiling.
"How can you hate such things? Shades without substance. They can only scare. They can't harm you."
Basir was silent as we turned a corner, then another, seeking deeper. Distant sounds of rock foundations creaking crept upon us, drawing our senses to the rumbles of an underworld of insects, scuttling creatures, and sifting sands.
"So you say," he mumbled, further behind.
"I think we're close. I can see a blue glow." I slow down as we enter an antechamber, within which magnificent life-size statues sit, four of them staring at us, daring us to step further. Between them, a blue glow strikes through in slits, cutting eerie slices of light through the chamber. Combined with the flames of the torch, the room seems to move. The paintings on the wall are fluid, almost alive. It's the dust, playing tricks with our senses. I've heard of invisible tiny creatures that live in the air and invade our noses, making us see things that are not there. They seem real enough to me. The voice behind me is quite close. "Look, the door, it shifts too. It welcomes you. You must enter."
"Of course. That's why we're here."
I stride in, thrusting the light ahead of me, and my breath is captured by the scale of blue that cascades across me. A cavern of aquamarine with gold and white stars shimmering above a blue floor which moves like water. I'm suspended by its undisturbed magnificence. I've seen nothing like it in all the years of my profession, robbing for others, now finally for myself.
"Look at the days in the middle, Erish."
The voice behind now seemed to be all around me, as I shake my head and try to breathe out. The confidence of my stride into the room has propelled me forwards, and I reach the middle where a large plinth holds only a death mask, blue, magisterial, worth more than anything I've seen.
"Take it. Hold it."
The voice swirls around me, and I see an eddy of dust by the door. But as I realise that must be Basir, and wonder what has become of him, I do reach for the mask and place it on my face. Feeling dizzy, my head heavy, I steady my arm on the dais and find myself falling onto the full length of it. I turn, my eyes seeking upwards to the lapis lazuli sky, and try to blink.
"It is so beautiful, this prize, this sky."
"And so powerful, the true prize of eternal life." The voice speaks more softly, and I glance to my left to see myself looking down upon me. "I'm so grateful that you came to claim your place amongst the eternal." I see my mouth move, but know these are not my words, and try to bring my hands to the mask, but cannot remove it. I try to scream, but no sound emerges. The voice continues from the mouth of my body, looking down upon me. "Long have I been incarcerated within these cursed walls, kept alive by the healing succour of the lapis lazuli. This tomb is a trap for the gods, for I am such a one. Ur-Nammu, once the consort of Nannu, Ishtar to some but my beloved, until she abandoned me in this gilded cage for another." Oh, I have yearned for death as I stared at the hard blue skies and the stars inside my eternal mask for thousands of years. And now you, my dear unbeliever, will do the same. My own body leans down and whispers into my ear, "Until another comes to rescue you." My old body turns, strides to the door, taking the light of my torch and all my hopes with it. As the door grinds to a close, I hear the final words. "No need for death tonight, Erish. At least, not yours."
Thank you for listening. When I listen back to this story, I realise that I have some sort of obsession with being trapped in a body, or trapped in someone else's body. I think that dates back to the fact that I've had asthma since I was very, very young, and used to have dreams about being stuck in tubes and pipes, and I remember my bedroom swelling and groaning at me when I was ill. Anyway, now that's long under control, but somehow still seems to inform the stories I write. Thanks for listening. See you next week. This is Jake Jackson. Bye-bye.